the JSA Clicks podcast, the show where we discuss high-level competitive, casual, and everything in between. Your host is Jay Solomon, and now, on to the show.
Hey everyone, this is the JSA Clicks podcast, episode something. We discuss the Federative HeroClix environment as well as any alternate formats that are currently relevant. And this episode will contain many alternate formats. I'm your host, Devin Owens. Today I'm joined by my co-hosts who were actually at the event that we're talking about today, and I wasn't. So I'm just going to be chiming in where necessary and directing the discussion. We have Jackson.
Hey.
And Az.
Hey, what's going on?
All right, yeah, so we're going to be talking about HeroClix for Huntington's. Happened in Alabama 2 weeks ago and had like 7 different events.
So many events.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Fun. If you're going to fly out, you'd better at least have a bunch of HeroClix to play.
Yeah, agreed. 5 whole days is great.
That was one thing that Worlds last year did better than previous years, was just having more stuff to do. I still didn't want to do as much of it as I would have liked, but at least they had the, like,
just the option there of stuff. Like, there's always something is great.
Yeah. And BR is going all day, or basically all weekend except for Saturday. Like, there's always something for you to do.
Very cool. Yeah, so I guess let's start at the beginning of when you guys got there and go from there.
Sure, you want to go to first, Jackson?
Yeah, sure. So first night we got there, Wednesday was the sealed event. I don't even remember what boosters we used, but we used some super old Marvel and DC stuff.
All I know is you got a gravity feed of the Hobbit.
Yep. So
one team had to be a 400-point Hobbit team.
Yep. So I played 400 points of the Hobbit gravity feed, and it was awful and fantastic at the same time. I had a lot of fun just.
Did you only face other people playing 400 points of the Hobbit?
I only faced the CC of also playing Hobbit.
Yeah, it was. If I remember correctly, it was a gravity feed of the Hobbit, 2 packs of like an old DC set.
I think Slosh and Teen Titans.
Yeah. And then so your C player had to be all from the Hobbit. The B player had to use the Titans and Slosh stuff. And then your A player got to use whatever was left.
Yeah.
So just like anything that wasn't used in the other two players' builds.
Correct.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
I don't think anyone used the Hobbit stuff that didn't have to.
Well, fair. I mean, that set's ultra old and was powered down even at the time because it was Lord of the Rings.
It was really, really fun seeing a lot of these old figures. I was playing with Emily and Jay that night, and for Emily's team, we pulled Emerald Empress and Cyborg from Teen Titans, who both have traits that are basically 10 plus range mind control, see through everything. So she's like, okay, here are 2 little Thanoses, Emily. Go play. And she destroyed. It was great.
Hilarious. I couldn't tell you what those characters do.
Oh, so many words of I see through everything, but just that, basically.
Yeah, that tends to be pretty reasonable and sealed.
Yep.
Yeah, I did not play that event. I didn't get in until Thursday.
Anything you want to talk about that event specifically, Jackson?
No, just a lot of fun. Right? No, we got top 16.
Yeah, okay.
It was fun.
Thought you'd made the cut or something at least.
Yeah, it was a very good time. Thursday I think was just BRs and whatnot.
So Thursday was BRs, and then the rock qualifier, 400 silver theme rock qualifier.
Was that the one that Mike Askew won, or was that a different event?
Yeah, okay. That's the one that Mike won. Against Lucas in the finals, I believe.
Yeah.
You'll be hearing the words Lucas in the finals a few more times this episode.
Yeah. He was playing just a fun, different variation of what he had been playing. He was like, I wanted to play Shredder Clone because I haven't played him in a while. And he was playing super rare Brother Voodoo, not the Prime, the regular one. Because currently there are exactly 2 mystical characters that have the shield team ability.
Oh, wow. And the other one's terrible, I assume?
The other one is Iron Inquisitor.
Oh, it's Iron Inquisitor. Right, of course it is.
Yeah.
And with Theme, you only have 4 sideline spots.
Yeah, and...
Ouch.
And Brother Voodoo's 20 points cheaper, so...
Correct.
Yeah.
That's nice, too.
But Mike won playing Legacy Thanos with, you know, Death Metal Wonder Woman, Mad Jim, some other pieces I don't remember. But Legacy Thanos is probably pretty much all you need to know.
Yeah, it's been interesting seeing that figure have a resurgence in Silver. I really did think that the second errata of you can't do things on subsequent turns would be sort of the nail in the coffin of that figure. But I guess 400 points means you just have enough barrier in that
you can just build
around. You have enough support.
Yeah.
I got in Thursday. I played in a 1BR with Josafa, Alyssa McNeil, and Diego Valdez. We had just a blast. I hit 10 consecutive shape changes against Joe.
What's that?
It was next phase. So I had the Hulk that had shape change. I had Madison had shape change, and I had Jen Walters that had shape change. And he's like, "Can I attack anybody?" I'm like, "Nah." But then it was getting warm, and we ended up heading out to the Airbnb after that.
Yeah.
Because we wanted to get a good night's rest, because Friday was the event that all of us were excited for.
Yeah. Friday was 3v3 teams, 400 modern Highlander.
Highlander, right?
Extreme, yes. Highlander.
Extreme, yes. Highlander. So no
one
figures.
Copy of any game element across all, yes, three teams, correct?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
As you did much better than me. I want to go first.
Sure. So leading into this event, I was teaming with Dan and TJ from Clickstuff. And going into it, they basically said, build whatever team you want. And I'm like, okay. So I played a mystical theme with Wong Kong, Iron Inquisitor, Double Scott Porter, Elsa Bloodstone Prime, Madison Death Metal Wonder Woman. And I had the trick arrows on Elsa. I got Amat's Tomb as well. So my team was pretty stacked up for the C slot, because I played a bunch of teams that didn't have Scott Porters, and when you have Scott Porters and your opponent doesn't, you're just numerically, you are at such an advantage.
Yeah. Nothing else at that power level and that point cost.
Yeah. Everything at my, every attacker on my team, my three main attackers, all had base 13 attacks, and I had 5 perplexes.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So I was just, I went 4-1 or 4-0 in Swiss, and then we made top 8. I beat Saul in top 16 for us to move on to top 8, and then lost to Josafa in top 8, which all three of us lost to Clay, Ed AB, and Josafa. So I can't even be really upset that I lost.
Yeah, it wasn't the difference maker or anything.
No.
How frequently did you get to pass the trick arrows off to Kong?
Never, because Kong actually ended up as the avatar of Amit.
Okay.
Because I gave him steel energy and poison, because he got Kathan more often than not. So I wanted him to have steel energy for it.
That makes sense.
But Elsa overperformed throughout the day for 30 points. Just the things she gets to do with trick arrows because of free attacks is just silly.
Yeah, and she just also has running shot. So, like,
yes,
she can pretty running frequently shot, get into range strike, of
yeah,
attacks.
Well, so my general go-to is Blackheart with 3 shields, goes out 8, then takes Wong and Kong. Death Metal Wonder Woman then just carries Elsa up next to Kong, and then Kong carries Elsa the rest of the way. So that Kong gets to attack, Wong gets to flurry, and then Elsa gets to make her free attack against an equipped character, and then big on a quake attack. And that's usually the game at that point.
Yeah.
Big was your most commonly used?
Big and acid. So acid...
Not too dangerous?
I never used too dangerous. But so because I always wanted the second attack, and you can't trigger too dangerous off of big. It never really came up, and acid ended up being really good because I played a lot of Kongs. And acid, if you don't know this, against a character with impervious, basically gives your entire team persistent strike.
Yeah. Yeah, you reduce all damage by one
if they
less.
Hit impervious, they take one.
Yep.
Interesting. Yeah, that is not how I would have interpreted that.
That is how text. It was ruled.
That is how it was ruled.
Yep.
I never played against the full point APOC, but I was ready with multiple USB arrows. Then my goal was to USB two of the swords and then have her hit somebody else, steal their sword, unequip her trick arrows with her free. Because I also got a ruling of if you can just activate her free and unequip her with no legal target to equip.
Sure.
Yep.
So then I would unequip my trick arrows and then shoot their APOC to stop and KO their sword. It never came up, but I was ready.
That is pretty cool.
But yeah, just the...
Yeah, you totally... I mean, that seems like a pretty uncontroversial wording, ruling based on the wording of her thing, which says choose an unequipped equipment. An adjacent friendly character may immediately equip that equipment.
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
It's optional within the text of the trait.
The only thing that you couldn't do with it is the bikes, because you can't just unequip them because of the rule of occupancy.
Yeah.
So it works when you re-equip them, but because the bikes kind of need to get a change in wording. They need to be errated on their wording.
They're very strange.
Having equipment with the wording things can't be put in this square is not good.
Yeah. But I ended up playing against 2 300-point Kongs in the C slot, and I was a little nervous about that, and then they died.
Yeah, I heard that there was a lot of 300-point characters going around, and we'll hear about some of them in a minute here.
So I played with Adam Friedman and Emily. We all played 300-point figures. It was a pretty... We had a pretty fun idea. It's like, oh, let's just go in there with the big guys. And let's have some fun. And they did pretty well. Adam, I believe, went 3-2, and Emily went, I believe, also 3-2, maybe 4-1.
No, Emily went 4-1. Yeah.
4-1, 4-1. All right. And then I don't remember how I did. I think it was like 2-3. Doesn't really matter. But I did pretty bad. I played 300-point Kong with the support of Necron, Black Legend, Batman, and Prime Hulk. Emily was playing 300-point Genesis with, I believe she had the Porters and then...
Carnage Surfer,
yes. And then Adam had 300-point Apocalypse with the Porters and KCGL. So just a lot of big guys. Kind of the idea we had was just, you know, let's just take it easy, play tent poles, and try to not die to win games and get through cut.
But it sounds like you died a bunch.
I did, in fact, die pretty much every game because, as it turns out, trick arrows are very, very good at taking care of OMAs with acid saying you can't reduce damage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, you were in the A slot, right?
I was the A slot.
It turns out all the power erasers were in the A slot.
Yeah, they were. Okay. Hey, I did play against one non power eraser thing in round one. That was cool. And then round two, I played against a Venom God of Symbiotes. That was awesome.
Wild.
Yeah. But unfortunately, other than those games, it was a lot of power negation, knockdown, set your attack value down.
What kind of power erasers?
TJ ended up round one, gets paired into Leech with a motorcycle.
Leech with a motorcycle.
I didn't even know someone was playing that.
Yeah, that's so sweet. And he lost because TJ was playing 300-point APOC.
Yeah.
And then he also played against Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, Emily played against Sherlock Holmes as well and did not know what it did. And then she texted our group about it and was like, yeah, I lost one game because I didn't know what Sherlock Holmes did. And I said, I also don't know what Sherlock Holmes does.
he says, I get to outwit you.
Yep. Yeah, apparently. I mean, the other power eraser that's in the format is just Ultra Trace Thanos. I don't know how many of those ended up seeing
play. Well, not in Silver.
Oh, sorry, this was modern. My bad.
Yeah, it's just Leech and Moriarty. It's Leech, Sherlock Holmes, and Q's Question, the mystery gun.
And Cosmo.
And Cosmo, yes.
Yes.
And Calendar Man, if it's the right month, but it wasn't.
It unfortunately wasn't, or else you would have seen a lot more of him.
Yeah, all the big tournaments are coincidentally during months where Calendar Man is bad.
quick tangent inside a digression. Origins is a month, is a tournament for Calendar Man.
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's next month.
That's very exciting.
That is true. And if Canadian Nationals is in August again, it will also be.
I really hope to actually see some Calendar Man be played.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem with him is that he's really hard to play with Scott Porters.
Yeah.
He just doesn't have any keywords, but, you know, I'm sure somebody can figure something out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, 300-point figures don't do great against a lot of Precision Strike, a lot of Trick Arrows, and I will admit, I did not play the best. But it was still a fun day. Really cool to see a lot of the different variations of teams. I really liked, I think the favorite team I saw all day was probably Easton's with just Detectives.
Detective doing... Prime Spidey.
Yeah, Detective Prime Spidey. Very, very fun combination. In 400 points, it's just kind of a really nice flow of you just have nonstop attacks coming at you from every angle. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff like that. And it was a really fun day.
Yeah, at 400 points, you end up with just so many attacks coming in.
Yeah. When you have four different figures that each say make multiple attacks, you're sitting there for a while rolling dice.
And everybody has five actions too, so that contributes.
Yeah, it's so oddly enough, playing 400 point modern felt much better than playing 400 point silver.
It really did. It didn't feel that bad.
Now, like, it was Highlander, so that's a big deal.
Yeah, yes. That does help for sure. Let's just have a quick look at the winning teams, just because I think that's interesting. So, 3v3, yeah, it's this one. So
big shout out to Phoenix Nest, Anthony and Jose for winning.
Yeah. So, yeah, Alyssa, Anthony Berrigan, and Jose Kush. And, yeah, we have Alyssa on X-Men with 110-point Camo Prime. Wonder Woman, Carnage Surfer, Apoc Genesis, Scott Porter, Daredevil with Amir Amasa. Daredevil with Amir Amasa is cool. I like that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she didn't equip camo. I guess, like, Killmonger, like, she's just worried about that.
Yeah, possibly.
Or just didn't have that. No, she had 5 points. Well, it's not really to equip him with 5 points.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you could do Bucky's arm, I guess, but.
Oh, yeah, well, they might have given it, Bucky's arm might have been for somebody else. Yeah,
yeah, I haven't looked at the other teams yet.
I'm pretty sure Anthony was playing Ghost Rider, so.
Yeah, this team is sweet. Lots of offense, lots of defense.
Yep.
Just yeah, Camo was a great figures. Call for this tournament.
For sure. Definitely.
Because for one of the teams, he's just a really solid character, and the things that can beat him, you're much less likely to run into.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a figure that, like, gets pushed out of normal modern a little bit just because you're going to run into the stuff he doesn't like playing against a lot, but...
Yeah. And then just the backup of 400 points, like, he's not even... He is the main focus, but, like, there's definitely other threats that you don't even really have the time to deal with him most of the time.
And Wonder Woman camo is so good.
Very good. Has quad rollouts if everything goes right. It's a lot.
You just stick your Wonder Woman, like, as far back as possible, and they can't deal with your camo.
Pretty much.
All right, and then we have Anthony, who, yeah, was on Ghost Rider with Bucky's arm. There's Bucky's arm. Arachnite with Skybreaker. Cool to see Skybreaker, something you don't see very frequently in normal modern, but...
Yeah.
It's really good with Arachnite.
It always has been, but people don't do it that much. They usually Soul Sword, but Soul Sword...
I played against Jane doing the same thing, yeah.
Nice. And then we have Star Sapphire Ring on Blackheart. Kong with Avatar of Amit. You're not the only one to have figured that one out, I guess.
Yeah.
Iron Inquisitor, Mephisto, Madison with the Hell Cycle. Why does Madison have the Hell Cycle?
It's probably to actually give her real sidestep.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I assume that's
with her moving every turn.
Yeah, because of Underworld giving her actual sidestep.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, that's very funny. Yeah, and then we have Casey Green Lantern, who continues to be very good, but hasn't seen as much play recently as he did before rotation. Although, also, I guess part of that is hasn't seen as much play recently as he did before
Scott Porter.
But this is, you know, only one team can play the Scott Porters. So this was a mystical theme. I mean, this looks like a sweet team.
Yeah.
Only figure that isn't on here that I'm sort of surprised about is Kale, but I guess you just don't really need it. Like, your defense is coming from other avenues than just having.
Yeah, and you're just trying to punch them really hard.
Yeah. And you have, you know, Inquisitor and I assume, yeah, King Killmonger on the sideline, of course. So.
Was Anthony not playing a Prime? That's interesting.
Yeah, no Primes at all. This is where Serge Parameter's team went for this team.
Yeah, that
is a game more element sense. That we should talk about in more detail in a little bit.
Yeah, I want to make one more point that I Alyssa did, that those guys did what I think was correct. It's what we did as well. And I saw other teams that didn't do this. They gave one person both Scott Porters and didn't try to split them apart.
Yeah.
I think that is correct. Because I saw, like I said, I saw other teams, like one of the players got the white shirt, one of the other teams got the black shirt. And I think it's just the numerical, like I said, the numerical values you get for both of them when your opponent doesn't have them is insane. And when you don't have them and your opponent does, you're already at a disadvantage. So I think you just want to keep them together for anybody playing in a format like this again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And also, if you put them both on the same team, you have a little bit more freedom to play non-themed on your other teams.
Exactly.
Which is pretty nice. Not that any of these three played non-themed and they won the event, so, you know.
Yep.
Clearly that was a totally reasonable decision anyway. Yeah, and then we have the last team of the three with Avengers, with Prime Spidey, Hawkeye and Hawkeye with Trick Arrows, Wong, Miss Marvel, Falcon, which Spider-Man is this? Oh, right. This is the 25-point one that gives out team abilities.
Yes.
So much shield, I assume, is part of what that's doing.
Spider-Man TA, yes.
And Legacy Ant-Man.
Yep.
I love
Hawkeye, Legacy Hawkeye Giant.
That's a figure that I haven't actually played and probably won't ever. But I really want to. The size changing stuff just has some really cool knock on effects.
Yep. Yeah, and this is like the perfect time to use it with Highlander and themed. Just like, yeah, just go send in a giant Hawkeye. That's a great idea.
Yeah, and the second Wong that we're seeing as well, so
yep,
that's cool.
Yeah, Wong, after actually getting to play him, Wong is great.
Yep.
Wong's nice. Really, really good.
Glad to hear it.
I also
it's
really
a figure that like looks really good on the face of it, but could have ended up not being as good as he looked.
Yeah, the Flurry Precision Strike exploit with Prob is just so good. His trait never came up, but...
Hey, if he's good enough without his trait, fantastic.
Yeah. These teams are great.
Yeah, and then we have another finals team, so I guess we should just talk about both, but they're pretty similar, honestly. Clay and Alyssa were playing very, very similar teams. Ed was playing something quite different with 200-point
Mastermold.
That's wild. Mastermold, Black Skull, Kong, Jennifer Kale, Mephisto, Scott Porter. Interesting.
Yep.
And that's Black Shirt Scott. That makes sense for this kind of team. I assume that was making a bunch of Scott Porters and potentially.
Oh, he had a big old pile of White Shirt Porters next to his.
Yep.
It was pretty cool.
Against Dan. Because Dan lost to Ed in top eight. They went 17 turns. And then Ed brought out a 375-point Phoenix Sentinel.
Oh, my.
Oh, that's incredible.
That is awesome. That happened
in an
actual event. I don't
even know
what
Phoenix Sentinel does at 375
points.
Neither do I. I have to look this up. Phoenix Sentinel. There he is. 350. Sorry. Yeah, I mean, basically the same stuff, just a 13 and 5 now.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. You know, impossible to kill. I mean, like four stock clicks. That's amazing. Yeah, Master World's super cool. So seeing it make the finals is very nice. This is the kind of event where you can actually pull the Master Mold out and do well with it. So, and I think we're going to see some more Master Molds on the silver side later, right?
Yeah,
probably. Yeah,
a few of them in there.
I like that he's using the Matt Reed tech of the Ra's al Ghul Prime on the sideline.
Yeah,
it gives all the Scott Porters plus one attack.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not using another Prime, throw it on there. Why not?
Yeah, we did the same thing with Emily's team of just you're not using it, just give him plus one attack.
Yep.
And then we have Jasafa with Hawkeye and Hawkeye, World's Finest, Miss Marvel, Moriarty, Shaggy, Penguin, Misty Knight, Owlman, Batman. Moriarty's the one that, like, I think the most people would not know what it does, including me.
So Moriarty's 45-point leadership. His big thing is he has a trait that's choose an opposing character with one or more tokens and deal them one unavoidable, but if they're not KO'd, heal them a click. So he's basically just a TK, outwit, perplex leadership that can ping your opponent.
Oh, that does not say within range or line of fire.
No, it is interesting. Anyone on their last click, power action, they're dead.
I want to make a point. It gets increased by Amit's Tomb.
Of course it does. Yep.
What doesn't get increased by Amit's
Tomb? Amit's Tomb was on the sideline of this one, to be clear.
Yeah, so you deal them two unavoidable and they heal one if they're not dead.
Yep. For a power action, it's pretty good.
Yeah, lots of
Amit's Tomb is a whole other issue.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it more when we get to Silver, because it was huge on the Silver side. Yes. Big on Modern, but huge on Silver. I mean, this is a cool team. It includes a bunch of figures that don't see much play, which is something Jasafa does really well.
Yeah, and Joe plays this team really well. Like, he's been playing playing versions of this team for a while.
Yeah, I mean, this is the 400 point, so it has a bunch more figures we never see, but...
Yeah. The Owlman CSA, like, was really good. Like, he just had CSA's so cool many TA. Probs. And then, he wants to give his detectives action tokens so that he can clear them so he can get Murder in the City Enduring.
Is CSA copyable?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wild. Why aren't more people not playing this Owlman? I mean, I guess just no good keywords. Yeah. I've answered my own question. No good keywords. But he plays really well with Scott Porter if you can...
He does, yeah.
Actually,
and in a 400-point format, when it's very nice.
Yeah, I guess difficult in 300 to dedicate. Yeah. Like 75
when you get to 75 points of support, you're like, what are you really doing here?
Figures. Yeah,
but still, would be quite good. Anyway, really cool teams. This Extreme Highlander format always brings out some really interesting team building. So, I'd recommend anybody who's interested. There's the whole top 20 or something people with a bunch of individual teams on each units. If you want to have a look, there's a lot of really interesting stuff in here.
Yep.
All right.
That was my favorite event of the weekend, and team events are always my favorite events of HeroClix. So
yeah,
same. It was by far the best day.
I still think we should change team events in HeroClix just slightly to the Magic, and I think you've told me before that it's also true in Flesh and Blood, where people who are done their games can give advice to the people who are still playing.
Yeah, I wish we could, but I do understand why we can't.
Yeah, there's time pressure in HeroClix that doesn't necessarily exist in those other games, but
it
would be cool. It'd make it feel more like a team event, right?
I agree.
That's the only reason I advocate it. I think from a practical standpoint, it's probably a bad idea, but
most of your team feeling
is the prep going into it and less the actual game.
Yeah, and for this Extreme Highlander, at least the team building is super collaborative too.
We had our own group chat separate from the Clickstoff group chat. We put a lot of work into what we had.
Yeah. Totally makes sense. Yeah. Anything else happened on the Saturday there? Sorry, was this the Friday? I don't know.
This was Friday. I don't believe any. I think that was the entire day other than BRs.
Yeah, collapse stuff. After that.
Definitely.
Yeah, we went to get Mexican food at Rosie's Cantina, and then we went home and went to the Airbnb and cooled off because it's so hot.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not that hot where I was.
Yeah.
Has not been that warm.
My only negative takeaway from the weekend was how hot it was, and some of my personal issues with Silver that I've expressed to Aaron, yeah. But like, yeah. No matter what you hear about, like, any of the negatives coming from like the weather or anything, don't let that dissuade anybody from going in future years. This event is amazing. This was actually my first year going. And it was, I am sad that I had missed the previous two.
Yeah, I've never been. I just have too many things that I want to take vacation for. It's hard for me to go to more than one Travel HeroClix event every year, but maybe I'll manage it eventually. Yeah, and then the next day was Silver, right?
Next day was Sealed.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Next day was
Scott Porter versus the world.
Okay, what was this event? I don't know anything about it.
So it was two booster Sealed, one booster of Deadpool, so the new Deadpool set, one booster of Next Phase.
Okay.
You could mulligan your Next Phase booster twice. You could not mulligan your Deadpool booster.
Yeah. Interesting.
At the end of the event,
I guess they probably just didn't have that much product.
Yeah, they only had six boosters left over at the end of
the event. They actually had to take, they had to take the brick out of the auction. Or I'm sorry, out of the first place prize.
Yeah.
To allow the additional people that signed up for so that everybody could play.
Yep,
that's cool.
With the understanding that WizKids would honor that brick and give it to the winner.
That seems like a good idea. Just get as many people.
Letting
as
more people play is.
We had 143 players.
That's fantastic. So cool.
Wow. It was so cool. It was the hottest day by far. Oh, it was rough.
I mean, with 143 people there, I can imagine.
Well, every single game was me shaking my hands with my opponent saying, I'm going outside, and they would agree to join me.
Yeah, literally, like, my dice were sticking to my hands.
I'd set my arm on the table and it'd just stick to the map and I'd have to slowly peel it off. It's like,
like, super early May, too. Wild.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I didn't use any of my mulligans. My pulls were great. I ended up pulling the super rare Magneto, which the sculpt looks amazing, and he's a lot of fun and Sealed. And then from Next Phase, I pulled Chase Baby Groot, the one that can do Quake after charging.
Yeah.
The good Chase Baby Groot, not the other one.
Yeah.
I ended up dropping after round 5 because I was X2 with, like, not great points, and only one X2 would make. Because I lost to Scott Crampton in the last round, in round 5. But all in all, like, it was a fun event. That Magneto slaps. His only problem is he's 175 points of outwinnable.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always an issue. So the name of the event is Scott Porter versus the world. Does, like, the last person have to play against Scott or something?
Scott plays in the whole tournament.
Yeah. So
he has bounties on himself that if you play him and beat him, you get the bounty. And then if you lose, you get a dice tray, and the bounty for that round gets added to the next round.
That's cool.
Yeah.
He did not do too well because Prime Rogue and Moon Knight make it for an unbalanced format.
Yep. I also did it mulligan with my two boosters. I pulled Super Air Cable and just had a bunch of range figures. Unfortunately, I didn't pull 3 equipment to equip to him, so that was a little sad. But couldn't use that trait. I just had him with the rare Clint Barton from Next Phase, the 75.1. The common Clint Barton, the uncommon Mystique that just has pickup power, which was pretty great. And the last figure I'm forgetting, I think it was Layla Elfuli or whatever from Next Phase. Just a really big range theme. I ended up going 3-3 on the day. I actually was able to kill a Moon Knight, which I wasn't expecting to, which is pretty cool. But I got absolutely wiped by a Prime Rogue in the final round. I ended up going, I believe, 3-3 on the day. When pretty much most of, I think, top 16 was, correct me if I'm wrong, Moon Knights?
Thanks. I don't really remember. I kind of left after. We went and got dinner afterwards. But this is also in this event, each player can buy up to 5 uses of probability control at $1 a piece. All proceeds went to charity. So basically, as soon as the first attack happened, both players burned all their props.
Yep.
Yeah, that's how that usually goes.
That was every single one of my games. It was, oh, this is the biggest attack? Okay, we're rolling it 10 times.
But yeah, it was a fun event. I was excited to get to play with the set, you know, almost 8 weeks early.
Yeah.
But those two sets are not balanced for Sealed.
No, they're not. Just getting Trick Arrows just kind of immediately guaranteed you an amazing advantage.
Yeah. And Rare Moon Knight, like, people were just hard mulliganing their packs for Rare Moon Knight. Like, yeah. And then if you got Prime Rogue or Phoenix Wolverine, as long as you didn't miss, you probably won. Like, because I know a Moon Knight took down a Prime Rogue because Prime Rogue missed.
Wild. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Just two incredibly high point figures with stop clicks.
Yes.
Yep. And the one says you can't use powers.
And the other says free heal a click. Mm-hmm. So pretty hard to put down.
Yeah, I imagine that usually Rogue is winning that matchup, but you do have to hit your attacks.
I don't think I actually saw a Rogue versus Moon Knight matchup. I really wanted to.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, it was really cool to get see the Deadpool stuff early. Yeah. I have since sold my Magneto.
Always a good plan in advance.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I ended up donating my cable to the auction. But it was a great event. It was
good. Excellent.
Being able to actually like open product that far in advance was pretty cool. Big shout out to them for actually getting that going this year. We didn't have to wait till half the day to see if we actually get the product this time. So that was nice.
Yeah.
So big props all around for the event runners for that.
My only negative to that event was the way they handled maps.
Yes.
I agree. So basically, as they were setting up for the event, they laid out one map at every table, and it was Daily Bugle Dockyard on one side, construction site on the other. You had to play on one of those two maps. So
interesting.
I understand, empathize, and I'm all supportive of. Only allow small maps. Don't allow big maps in this Sealed event to ostracize new players who may not have them, or it just is less fun for them. It's supposed to be a fun event. But one, there should have been some diversity in the maps that we had the ability to pick, because there would be diversity in teams that would want different maps. It was two outdoor maps.
Yeah.
In a set with giants.
Yeah.
Like, they should have allowed us, like, give us the heads up. Hey, this is a map. You can bring your own maps. Only small maps are allowed. We would have been able to accommodate anybody who was there. I brought all of my maps. I think that would have been a better way to handle it. Or have a diversity of different maps.
Agreed. Just limiting it to only small maps would probably have been fine, but... Yeah, it was a little unfortunate having to play on those two maps when, as said, there was a lot of giants and most of the set of next phase sees through hindering. So was not a great day for defense.
Yeah, really.
But other than that, like I said, the event was great, ran very well. So very happy to play in it. And to give my money for charity.
Yeah.
Then Sunday was the silver tournament.
So what'd you play?
Oh, I played a team I shouldn't have played. We mentioned about the Heat, I ended up playing a team that required me to basically barrier for 50 minutes. And that was very difficult to focus as it got hotter and hotter in the day. So I played Space Leo. I played a Latveria theme. So I played Space Leo, Doom the Annihilating Conqueror, Yondu from the Guardians of the Galaxy Advent Calendar, Moriarty, Mad Jim, both Porters, and Star Sapphire, with a nifty traffic barrel. So the premise of this team is go up on points at the start of the game by stealing all your objects, and then making you go through 20-some squares of barrier with 4 actions and no improved movement.
Lots of figures that almost nobody else plays, which is always cool.
Yeah. It worked. So my first game, I only got rid of... first round, I pair against Dan. And I lose map. Because obviously I want to be on Morlock Tunnels. And so I lose map, we go to a small map, and him and I actually just end up fighting it out. I lost. In my round 3, though, my opponent plays his team on the map. And I said, okay, can you please put out all of your equipment cards? He wasn't really sure why I was asking. I explained to him. He had put down 9 cards. There was one left by the time he began the game. I was up 65 points at the start of the game. Which was very funny.
Pretty good team.
But I went 2-2, did not make cut. I lost to Dan, and then I lost to Richie, Saul's brother. Had a play planned out going into it that if I had to play against an Agatha, who put me in the rune, how I would kill it, which was Mad Jim gives Forearm Doom the blue cube. He voops in and then triple flurries her. And I did that, but then Blackheart and Kong killed the rest of my team.
Yeah, always an issue.
Yeah. So basically my thoughts on Silver, and I have spoken these thoughts to the people that are in charge of Silver, 400 points is still a mistake.
Yeah.
Because it allows for too much. Because I understand that they're like, 400 points allows all these big figures to be playable. They're not playable. Yeah. Yes, you can physically play them. They are not competitively playable.
Ultra Chase Thanos is the only like really high point character that like is vaguely playable, I think.
Yeah. Because if all you did was you gave people 100 more points to play under-costed characters.
Yep.
Yeah, one thing that you could do is not increase the point, the action limit when you increase the point value.
Yes, because 5 actions was very frustrating too. Like, just things just took forever.
Yeah, turns take a really long time, and it means that just adding 2 extra attackers is pretty effective, whereas it really wouldn't be if you didn't get those extra actions.
Some things were missed on the ban list for this season that I have been told are going to be addressed. Mad Jim needs to be banned in Silver. He allows for too much versatility on top of basically loading your team another 30 points.
Yep.
With free equipment.
So do you think that, how much of the Silver equipment do you actually think is good?
I mean, the cube and the gauntlet are very good.
I think those cubes are really good, for sure.
Yeah.
As is the pick-up power gauntlet.
Yeah, when you just start with them and immediately swap for something else if you don't need it, it's pretty great. But it's also just the swapping itself in pretty much any format, especially now with trick arrows, is just an incredible problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also...
is an absolute necessary...
Oh, all of the Mandarin rings are so good.
Yes.
Yes.
So I know Lucas is kind of in agreement as well. Him and I have talked about it. Mad Jim should be banned. And Amut's Tomb needs to be banned. And I think Amut's Tomb needs to look at being potentially errated. Or just banned in Modern.
I was just saying, banned in every format, I think, is where we should start.
So let's talk a little bit about Amut's Tomb, specifically about it in Silver, but about the card in general as well. So this card is, again, if people have forgotten, on 4 tokens, you get a token from destroying blocking terrain. On four tokens, when a friendly character KOs an opposing character after resolution's healed in one click, that's good. Like, already it's pretty okay. It's not anywhere near its best chapter.
Pretty good for free.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's pretty good free.
It's never bad.
Element. Yeah. Once you get to six tokens, which is pretty easy to do in silver, and we'll talk about that a little bit in a sec. When a friendly character deals damage to an opposing character occupying or adjacent to a debris marker, increase the damage dealt by one. This one is absurdly busted.
Yeah, because it's not from an attack.
Yes.
Mystics, poison.
Pulse wave. Tri-Sentinel.
There is no limit on this. It is just a static increase of if you are in blocking, you are taking more. Or if you are next to debris, you are taking more.
Yep. And then at 8, just as a nice little bonus, when a friendly character KOs an opposing character, score 10 points. So I practiced Lucas's team, which won the event. And I'll just go over what that team was now for listeners. It was the old Blackheart, XMXS, 75 point with Power Gem, new Blackheart with Spin and Zero Ring, Iron Inquisitor, Mad Jim, three Tri-Sentinels, Scott Porter, Wendigo, Daredevil. I wasn't playing literally exact to this, but effectively. And three Tri-Sentinels fills up Amit's tomb so quickly.
Yep. Yeah, it's basically a non-issue. It's just sidestep, you've got it.
Yeah. So when you have three Tri-Sentinels as well, it's super hard to take out all three of them in one turn.
Yep.
So I was playing against Emily in a practice game. Her Thanos energy explosion to kill two of my Tri-Sentinels. On the next turn, I retaliated with the third Tri-Sentinel, which killed all of her support pieces except for Hope Summers.
Yeah.
With just the retaliation. And like, it retaliated with and dealt two damage on the pulse wave to a bunch of things, and then two damage on, I had influence ring on, so two damage on the knockback, and then one damage from the blocking being destroyed.
So, and then, I will say one thing, the knockback would not get increased.
Yes. That is the only one because
that is not damage from a character.
It's not damage from a character. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and then Cosmo was on last click because he'd only taken four, so then I influenced him into a wall and he died too. Like, it's just so silly. Oh,
that's the other reason that Mad Jim needs banned, is he is able to equip characters that never should have been able to be equipped.
Yes, I saw
influence ring on a Tri-Sentinel is absurd.
I saw multiple times people just equipping zero, making a barriers free, breaking it to deal two on just one game's doing that.
Yep.
It was insane.
Now, Lucas will argue vehemently, I think Tri-Sentinel should be banned as well in the format. And it's because the amount of times that I watched somebody retail with Tri-Sentinel and literally said, I don't care if this hits, I just hope I don't crit miss.
Yeah.
I think if Amit's Tomb is banned, Tri-Sentinel's fine.
Yeah, I also agree with that. Sure. I think that Amit's Tomb is definitely what's pushing it to the extent of that, because I don't think we see the same amount. Like, I don't think we see triple Tri-Sentinel unless you're Lucas.
I have a problem with free damage.
Like, I also have a problem with a dice game.
We play a dice game. There shouldn't be easily accessible effects that just deal penetrating damage.
I completely agree with that. I think the problem with Tri-Sentinel is just he can use it so many times to where he just deals six passively in a turn. It's...
Yeah, I mean,
that.
A 30-point character dealing that amount of damage is just
it's without quite, rolling dice.
Exactly. Yeah. All for free, while also having the advantages of being a giant and everything else. It's just, it's very overpowering. Amit's Tomb is 100% a game element that I believe should be looked at for either an errata or a ban in all formats.
Yeah, I kind of agree. The other thing, like, if, obviously, I'm fine if they don't ban Tri-Sentinel. Like, I just think that it would probably do the format some good. But I do think that they need to go back and reword all of the retaliators to the new retaliation wording.
What is the new retaliation wording?
They can't retaliate if a character's been moved or if a character's been placed.
Yeah, that is very annoying with how inconsistent the wording is across all of the retails of, like, which variation do you have?
Yeah, it's just older,
it would be a lot easier if it was just all the same retail.
Yeah, it should be the new one. Like, we have all clearly said that the new one is a more balanced version of the retail.
Yeah, because a lot of the reason that I got to kill Emily's whole team in that practice game was that I was able to carry my Mad Jim across the map to Free Barrier so that I could have Influence Ring instead of Zero Ring on Tri-Sentinel.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 400 points is a problem, in my opinion. Five actions, Mad Jim and Ahmot's Tomb are the big ones. Ahmot's Tomb being the biggest offender.
Yeah, I think that is currently the biggest problem in the game.
Yeah, because the other thing about Ahmot's Tomb is that after I killed most of Emily's team in the same turn, which was, you know, 180 points worth of characters, because there was still a Hope and a Thanos left, I scored 300 points or something.
Yep.
Like, how do you come back from that?
I've had, I've quaked with a Kong and scored 375 points in one quake. It's crazy.
Yeah, on the next turn, Emily managed to, or I can't remember what she actually did, but I was playing an Agatha, and even if she had killed that Agatha, she would have been behind like 200 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other element that I have talked to people about, but we don't actually know what the fix is C'thon.
Yeah.
Specifically because of Blackheart.
Yeah. That specific interaction is just one that...
It makes Blackheart too consistent.
Yeah, it was never obviously intended, so how do you deal with that? I mean, it's to the point where Blackheart never should be able to just deal 12 penetrating, but he can.
Yeah, he used to be reliant on leadership, and now he's not.
Right. Basically, turn one, you take the action to put him to click two. Turn two, you go attack and put him to the click where he spawns the Hellfire Club guards and then heal for the free attack.
Yeah, or you just, like, move him, take the token, spawn the guard, kill the guard, charge flurry.
Yeah. Yep.
With a power gem. Like,
or trick arrows. Yeah. Whatever's more devastating.
For sure.
But yeah, so I don't know what the fix for C'thon and Silver would be, other than like an errata to Blackheart that says he can't have C'thon, or they would have to put a wording on C'thon that this cannot be assigned to an equipped character.
I think probably the easiest way is to add a line to C'thon that says the character can't heal. Just That'd make him an actual setback, because as current, he is not a setback. He is meant to be a buff with a drawback, so he is aggressively better than most sideline options, but that drawback is so inconsequential, it's not a drawback, so it's just a free plus one stats.
Yeah, if you have black shirt Scott Porters and steel energies stuff around, then...
You can quite literally ignore that text and it's fine. Like not actually in a game, but like you will heal very quickly.
True. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, even just on Daredevil.
Yeah. There's no bad option. And then like at the end of the day, even if for some reason the matchup you don't want to put on your character, okay, Porter has plus one defense this game. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah. What do you guys think about the Mandarin rings? Silver.
Spin is a requirement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Especially if you're playing any 1 or 2x2.
Yeah.
If you're only playing 1x1 characters, spin is still very good, but slightly less. But you can't TK Daredevil or Tri-Sentinels, so just that extra 2 squares of reach is a lot.
and not only does that, it's a 5-point counter to two very important
Ghost
figures
Rider
in a modern and Killmonger.
Killmonger, yeah.
You're just like, oh, you're not adjacent anymore. Get out of here.
It's entire play styles and strategies just by existing.
Spin has always been an extraordinarily powerful game element that didn't see as much play as it should have when it was originally in Modern. I mean, it saw a lot of play, but I think it's still less. I mean, at the time, you had to like actually take actions to pick it up and bring it back and equip it. So
yeah, a little worse than that.
And assigning two of them, like equipping two of them, was difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, that the text of equipped character can have a second object if it's also a Mandarin ring never happened.
Yeah, and now it's very relevant to where you just start with two and then swap out with Mad Jim every turn to always have the best two.
I do think that, I mean, outside of the Mad Gym part, but I do think the getting to start with two is cool because it is like a unique texture to Silver that people who played those game elements when they were in Modern wouldn't have gotten to experience.
I think Zero Ring wasn't played enough from the people that weren't just playing the version of Lucas's team. Because Zero Ring is incredibly powerful.
Yep. It is good. Never underestimate Free Barrier, no matter how small it is.
It's true.
Maybe it was played more than I think it was. No, it wasn't. I'm just kind of looking through things.
Yeah, I think by far from the weekend, I think the most played figure was Blackheart.
Yeah, I think it was.
I'm checking. It looks like
you mean
no 75 pointer.
Okay,
I believe everyone in top eight except for one player had a Blackheart. Yeah, everyone in top eight had a Blackheart. And
so the most played was Scott Porter, and then the second most played was Scott Porter. The third most played was Blackheart, and then Mad Jam, and then other Blackheart.
And then the fourth most played was Blackheart,
Yeah. And then Kong, and then Tri-Sentinel. Although that's counting the number of teams that Tri-Sentinel was on, if you just count the number of individual Tri-Sentinels.
I actually did. So I counted. There were 11 players playing Tri-Sentinels, and there were 22 Tri-Sentinels in the field.
Yeah, that sounds... I mean, honestly, that's less than I would have expected for 11 players playing in.
Yeah, seeing as how it's like, that's the best team in Silver.
I do think that three of them was the correct number. I saw a lot of people playing two, and it's just so easy to kill two in one turn.
Yeah, I agree.
How do you kill three?
Yeah, I couldn't kill three.
I think currently, if there are no changes, I think Silver is completely kind of not solved, but to the extent of I'm not excited to team build because there's not really a point. The best thing is very obvious. It's very much going to continue winning unless something is done about it. So I hope something is done about it.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of non-Tri-Sentinel teams did very well, but
yeah,
I do think that Tri-Sentinels, especially thanks to Search for Emma's team, are sort of missing the format.
I gave it a fair shot. I played in a couple of events with it. And yeah, I think if there's not adjustments made, which probably don't happen until next year, I just don't think it is a format that interests me at all to play in. And that's not me coming from like an elitist standpoint of like, I only want to play Modern. The format's just not fun to me.
Yeah, I genuinely looked at the format, decided not to play, and asked if I could help judge it. That's what I did for the day. It was so much better than playing.
Nice. Yeah, Silver's the weird format where it really only matters like once a year. So
Well, and like I know a lot of people that are like they really love Silver because they also have like I think one of the factors is they have this nostalgia factor of, oh, I loved this character when it was Modern and now I can play it again because it rotated. Yeah. I don't have that. I don't. When things rotate, I lose all attachment to them.
For me, so I sort of have that. But the thing is that I played in so many more tournaments when all of these figures were Modern legal than I do nowadays.
Yeah.
That I've just played out most of these things, and I'm just not that interested in revisiting them.
Yeah.
Like, if I would play in Silver, I would want to play some, like, goofy thing. Like, where the team I was thinking about playing with Regent or, like, Arno Stark or something like that.
Gotta blow up your own Angel. That's what I did last time I had to play Silver. Although, Dark Phoenix is banned currently, and that was a pretty integral part of that team. So, would be hard to actually build in the current Silver format. Okay, there's one team on this list that I really want to talk about because I don't know what it does.
I think I know what it is. Michael Nelson's?
It sure is.
Yep.
Yeah, so Michael Nelson played a team of the Beast that removes Protected Outwit, which makes total sense. That figure's always been pretty good, like a little bit easy to kill, but very good. The new 55-point Man-Thing, Demon in an Armor, Sage. I do not know what this figure does. I'll come back to her in a second to read her because I don't remember. And then two copies of some promo Poison Ivy or something that I've also never read.
This is the Iconics Poison Ivy.
All right. And then an Iconics Harley, I think.
I can explain what this team does.
All right. Yeah, whichever of you want to explain it, go for it, because I don't know what almost any of the figures do.
Sage just says whenever an opponent uses proper Plex or Outwit, they can only use it once per turn.
Yeah.
And then Az probably knows more about Poison Ivy than I do.
Yeah, so the way this team works, these Poison Ivies can poison and make close attacks against characters that are adjacent to their plant markers. To plant markers, period. Friendly plant markers. So what they do, they also generate them.
Also generate a plant marker?
So the Poison Ivies can generate plant markers within 4 squares of herself or a friendly plant marker. Man-Thing starts the game and makes 4 plant markers anywhere on the map.
Yep.
So what it's doing is it's putting the plant markers to where the Ivies can kind of like daisy chain them up into your starting area and then attacking you from your starting area, from her starting area. on a map like Negative Zone or, you know, Prison, Jailbreak, like one of these like blocked up maps. And then the one Ivy has the Red Lantern Ring, so it has penetrating poison. The other one has Precision Strike that can also unequip you.
Is Beast actually being used for his rally dice on this team?
I think
possibly. I actually don't know what
the friendly characters have X-Men team ability and can use it as free. And there's the Harley that makes it so that Poison Ivies only take 2 damage.
Yes, that is probably what it is.
It's probably actually to help heal back up.
Yeah. So the Poison Ivies stop the Harley from getting one shot, and the Harley stops the Poison Ivy from getting one shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so when Poison Ivy heals 1 or more clicks, after residents heal an adjacent friendly character named Harley Quinn 1 click. So yeah, it's for the X-Men support heal of they heal Poison Ivy, Poison Ivy heals Harley.
Right.
Yeah. And then yeah, they just mind control you across the map, or they poison you from across the map.
I'll be honest, I'm still a little unsure that Sage is actually good enough to be on this team, but clearly it worked.
It's a very great idea with the Poison Ivies, but little rough around the edges, but I like it a lot.
What it's trying to do, so because it's a 400 points over, there's a lot of perplex.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One, shutting down perplex to 1 keeps defenses low for her. And keeps reach low.
Yeah, yep. That's true. Because they're in their starting. Like, you don't want your opponent moving around too much because then you have to recreate your plants.
Yeah. But yeah, then it has like Demon in an Armor Shell.
Yep. And Man-Thing is just like kind of good.
Can fight you if you actually get to it.
Yeah, he's just like kind of good.
I like
good powers, good stats. Yeah, I think he's actually good.
Yeah, this team's super cool. I always love it when something completely out of left field comes into a tournament and does well like this.
Yep.
That's very cool.
Oh, and that Harley has a 12 attack. I didn't even realize that. So the Ivies have a 12 attack.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing about Iconics to me is that I pay no attention to them. So whenever one of them is good, I'm like, "Oh, what's that? Where did that figure come from?"
Start paying attention to the Iconics.
I know.
They've been pretty good lately.
Right? They are pretty good. And that actually leads us into another topic of conversation that I know Jackson wanted to go over. Although we should probably finish up the event quickly first. We've talked about all the actual like events that happened there, I think, now. Unless there's something I don't know about.
Yep, that was all of them.
I mean, there was a bunch of announcements and stuff that happened. One of them is that the venue for the past few years, which was Howard's store, won't be the venue going forward because Howard no longer owns that venue.
Yeah. Lucky Dice Cafe has closed its doors.
Yes.
Howard is still doing rock stuff, and I'm sure we'll be doing other stuff in the space, but the actual physical store that these events were being hosted at and, you know, was a store for the rest of the year no longer exists.
And then I think that's the only like big announcement that came out of it. Other than this announcement came out a couple days ago. We raised $63,000 for HDSA over the weekend, which I think is the most we've raised in the 3 years. And I believe that was without Scott Porter promos this year.
Yeah, I believe last year was 53,000, so that's a very big increase.
And that was with the Scott Porter figures.
Which I think also said they counted for like half of last year's revenue, so we beat it this year without a promotional figure. So
were there more players this year than there had been?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
I think the Scott Porter versus the World was the most players they've ever had.
I mean, that's, you know, competitive with World's numbers, basically, so.
Yep.
Pretty cool.
But yeah, so anybody that is on the fence of ever coming to this event, make sure you get there. The event is great. The Heroclix community is just absolutely fantastic.
Yep. Absolutely best event of the year. It was fantastic getting to see everyone, getting to play. If it wasn't for the heat, it would have been a perfect weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll have to see where it's hosted next year. It'll be interesting. I know, like, obviously it made sense to host it at Lucky Dice Cafe when that venue was available because, you know, there's no venue fees really at that point, so much cheaper to host. But if it is moving, hopefully it'll be somewhere that's a little more accessible to people. You know, I'd like to get a direct flight to a HeroClix event at some point.
Yeah, if Scott Porter maybe wants to, like, host it locally so I don't have to fly, I would not oppose to that at all. It'd be great.
And there really isn't much on the West Coast.
No, we don't get a lot of events.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take an excuse to go back out that way. I enjoyed my time in California when I was there a few years ago. So.
But yeah, I think that was pretty much most of the events.
Yeah. So, Jackson, you had some specific iconics that you wanted to discuss that you hadn't really seen people talking about.
Yeah. So we had a new release that I believe is officially legal, which I guess was actually technically released during Rock Cup, the Project Butterfly Peacemaker iconic set. I'm sure a lot of people have heard about this. We have a new figure in the set that is pretty meta warping, Murn. So 50 points as a trait. When a friendly character attacks, if a line of fire drawn to an opposing character that shares a keyword with Murn would be blocked, instead it isn't, and the target modifies their defense +1. Opposing characters within range can't possibly modify their combat values. Yeah.
Modify defense +1, who cares?
Yeah. It really doesn't. They know it's very powerful, so like, here's a downside. It's not really a downside, but here's a downside. His keywords, if you're wondering, are Argus, Suicide Squad, Animal, Assassin, Cosmic, Monster, Soldier, Spy. So pretty much X-Men. Everything important. Yeah, X-Men. So pretty much everything important.
Yeah, no Mystical, which is the only one that, like, you know, would be relevant that isn't there. But
you're going to
share a keyword with a lot of Mystical stuff.
I'm pretty sure absolutely any Mystical figure also has one of these keywords, so... The only one
that doesn't, that is currently played, is Ghost Rider.
There you go. There's the one counter to Murn.
Did you also read the last part of that trade of opposing characters within range can't possibly modify their combat values?
So, just as an extra little screw you, yeah, you can't modify your combat values. So you don't even get that +1 if he's within range.
Yeah, he has a full range, but it can be increased.
Yeah, yep. Why not? Get it up to 7.
He's only 50 points. He's also a leadership with a stop click.
PD, Suicide Squad, TA.
Yeah. PD probably won't matter that much if you're actually making use of his
But here's the funny thing that Murn is hilariously doing. So if you get him to a 6 range, Carded Surfer can no longer attack anybody.
Oh, because he would hypersonic in half his range, but he can't modify. Okay.
Because most of the time, like, Carnet Surfer, like, in certain scenarios, like, they'll perplex outside of their range. So they'll perplex up to a 6 range so that they can have the 6 range hypersonic. Well, when they go to hypersonic, as soon as they enter within his range, the range perplexes go away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he doesn't only stop the modification when you attack.
Like,
he doesn't have the range exclusion, which many of those do, because that just gets into this weird thing where you declare an attack and suddenly you don't have the range to make it, so you can't declare the attack. But then you do have the range because you're not declaring the attack, so you declare the attack.
Yeah, it's a very confusing.
But that's not applicable here.
No.
Yeah, I mean, like. opposing characters not being able to positively modify combat values is always quite good. This is obviously no Demon in Armor. That was, you know, when attacking characters with your characters within his range, so it didn't matter where the opponents were. You had full control over whether that worked or not. Whereas here, you just, you know, you don't have the full control. But I mean, if you shielded up to 7, that's going to be most people who are attacking you.
Yeah, and I can pretty much guarantee most Marine teams are playing shield, because if you don't need line of fire, range becomes the best thing. So we're probably going to start seeing a whole lot more of Hawkeye and Hawkeye. You know, Scott Porter's pulse waving through walls. This also works with giant reach, so you can giant reach through walls, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, he makes Kong better.
Yeah, he makes Kong way better. One figure that I think Mern might actually make pretty playable that I'm excited for is Black Lantern Green Arrow. For 50 points, he has his, you know, 13 attack, 7 range, and just traded, they can't modify their combat values, so they don't even get the bonus that he gives out. So you can just be a 10 range, never missing, dropping trick arrows or whatever for pretty low package, on top of also giving Necron, you know, a +3 to range, see through everything. Pretty substantial attacking range you got there. But that's just the tip of the iceberg of this guy. I'm sure we're going to see a lot more craziness that's going to devolve to probably a lot less defensive meta, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah, and again, he also, like many things recently, just says, when a friendly character attacks, it doesn't matter where your Mern is standing.
Nope. He just, if he's on the map, it's there.
Is wild. Yeah, this figure's very good. I'm imagining him if he'd existed when Prime Batman did.
Oh, God. Yeah, I don't like that.
No, you shouldn't.
I don't like that. Why did you have to put that in my brain? On top of that, that iconic set comes with 2 other figures I feel like are worth mentioning. The other I'll just quickly go over is the Butterfly. It's 60 points. It is only 1 click, but it has a trait of, at the beginning of the game, you may replace Butterfly with a standard character of 50 points or less. If you do, that character can use Butterfly's other trait and is considered to have Butterfly's bystander printed on its card, and has, when it would be KO'd, you switch it with Butterfly. So this is essentially 60 point swap for any 50 point or under figure that just allows you to be incredibly maneuverable. He has the animal, monster, cosmic, politician, and ruler keywords. So a lot of good keywords that you can kind of just cheat figures onto. You know,
how much do you want your Carnage Surfers to mind control? Not much, really.
Not much, no. But just having the option of, you know, this game, this Carnage Surfer is a Cosmo, or this Carnage Surfer is, you know, a Necron or whatever. It's just nice to have the option of basically being able to swap. It's just swap without X-Men, which is pretty cool. And then also giving out mind control to whoever you pick with its secondary traits.
And I mean, the beginning of your turn, making a bystander is not irrelevant.
Yeah, like, the butterflies,
they don't do much, but
no,
any body is usually pretty good.
Yeah. And they're sidestep flyers, so they can spread out pretty easily.
Tiny, so they can't carry, but yeah.
Ooh, that is true. Then, yeah, lastly, the Peacemaker from Project Butterfly. I'll quickly go over his 2 traits. He has Cold Open. The first time a friendly character is dealt damage by an opposing effect, if you haven't begun your second turn, after resolutions, you may choose that all characters have immune until your next turn. So what this basically means is, let's say you are going second and your opponent is about to come over and hit you with 50 attacks of an Alpha Strike. After the first one, you proc this trait, and that turn's basically over. All characters are immune, no one can be damaged, nothing can basically progress. So it's a very defensive way to, if you're maybe playing non-themed and expecting to lose that map roll, of being able to live through the assault and retaliate. So it's a very nice trait to have. And on top of that is a second trait, free once per game, move all characters that don't have immune 2 squares in the same direction. Characters don't need to break away for this movement. So on top of being able to defend against a very aggressive push, he just gets to move your entire team a little bit closer to give you that reach. And it's just a really nice option to have as a defensive strategy if you want to play something a little more risky. But all in all, this is kind of a crazy iconic set. I think it's only about $25 and you get a lot of very good figures.
Powerful stuff.
So
okay. Yeah. So that trait, why that don't have immune? What is that covering for?
I couldn't tell you. I'm sure they found some very
because it doesn't interact with his first trait. I mean, it could theoretically, because technically you could attack a character with Mystics and then activate his first trait, and then you would have the immune from his first trait on a turn where you could use synchronized moves. But
I
really don't understand what that's doing.
I feel like next year for Silver, I should just play Peacemaker and about 30 Wendigos. That sounds about accurate.
Spend your first turn moving them as far forward as possible. One of them dies. Next turn, kill everything.
Yep. Just cool. Make 30 attacks. Yeah, why not?
Good work. Yeah, the synchronized moves plays really well with Wendigos as well, of course.
Yep. But yeah, very good iconics. I would definitely recommend picking one up. Yeah, it's definitely going to change how the game is played for the foreseeable future for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, lots of interesting tools, at least. It'll be interesting to see how much impact they make.
Yeah, I'm really concerned about Marin going forward. Just, I don't know. Basically giving all of your characters IT everything is a little silly.
It's not IT everything has been an issue.
Especially because like every team has Scott Porter. So you're at least getting to attack Scott Porter.
Yeah.
And with trick arrows. You know, I went back and said Hawkeye with trick arrows is probably the best thing in modern right now.
Just now gotta put trick arrows on your Casey Green Lantern.
So now Hawkeye can shoot through everything to your Scott Porter. Shoot them, then big off of them, then too dangerous off of them. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. This is definitely a very intimidating figure. It's the one that it's kind of figure that comes out and you reread it over and over because you just can't believe that it's actually the trait, but it's just kind of there. And it's got me thinking a lot to if I'm really that hateful on it. I think I'm okay with it or leaning towards being okay with it just because this is an incentive of, you know, we're playing aggressively. We're not sitting back. We're not hiding. We're not doing anything. We are running out and we are swinging. And that's great. I like that. I like that he encourages that. What I don't like is that this is probably going to actually turn into I have 10 range with trick arrow. Good game.
So what I believe this is going to lead to is, did I win initiative? No, I'm dead.
Yeah, that's never fun.
Yeah.
It's the vulture problem.
I think that's why they put that Peacemaker in the same set, just to kind of have the answer of, hey, if they're going to kill you, here's something. But even then, it's very egregious how much he does for 50, I will say.
Yeah. I mean, Myrna is a lot of points.
But you don't even have to put him out in danger. Like, no. If he had to be adjacent to the attacker, like, okay. Like, I'd be more okay.
At least have spent some actions and stuff.
Yeah. But that, like, just him being able to be wherever he needs to be to do his trait. And then, like,
Butterfly plus Myrna is actually interesting as well.
I forget what Butterfly does.
That's
I
know
Butterfly
is like the replacement itself with one. A 50 point. Yeah. Just because I feel like there are definitely games where you just don't actually care about Myrn very much.
Yeah.
Probably.
That's fair.
So being able to have a Carnage Surfer or whatever in the games where you don't care about Myrn.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice.
Can you do Kong?
You can. It has to be a standard character.
Damn.
Yeah. I really think that Butterfly is incredibly underrated. I think people just aren't fully comprehending the basic just anything swap is just incredibly good. That versatility will win you so many games just being able to say, no, I'm going into this game. Or no, I'm going into this.
It cheats people onto theme teams too, right?
Correct. So this will cheat anyone onto Animal Cosmic Monster.
This is how we play Calendar Man.
Yeah, there you go. That gets him on.
Oh, I don't know why this made me think of it, but there was a team I heard about at Rock Cup that I thought was really cool because it was playing Sleipnir.
Oh, nice. I'm excited.
And what they did is they made Cthone the pilot. They used charge, so they used the Valhalla Incoming movement power, charge, generate the pilot, and then make an attack. If that attack does not hit, remove the pilot from the game. So it goes to the KO zone. So they would just activate it in their starting area, not make an attack. The pilot goes to the KO zone, and then they would run across the map. Prime Lilith would free pop over and then generate a 300-point Kong. It's hilarious.
Prime Lilith is a figure that seems like she should be really good, and I have seen no one playing.
I actually started building with her recently. I think she's going to start seeing her comeuppance, hopefully, with some new stuff kind of forcing that in, but we'll see. She's definitely a very good play.
And apparently Sleipnir with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's now, your opponent would score the 200 or 300 points for the Kong that you're bringing out. But they have a full big Kong that they are not incentivized to deal with, because they don't score any points off of it.
Yeah. And I love how the wording specifically lets Lilith do it, because it's point value from your KO zone, and it's in your KO zone, but it wasn't scored.
Yep.
That's great. That's a really good.
That's just like when I heard about it, I'm like, huh.
You could just generate anything. Yeah. That's cool. That's pretty cool.
You do now have to wipe your opponent, but you'll probably manage it. You have an extra Kong. It'll be fine.
On top of everything else you have. That makes up for Sleipnir, I think. That's pretty good.
Is Sleipnir a little bit random as well, or?
No, it's consistent enough. Okay. It's just four clicks of Involm for 60 points that kind of dies.
Yeah, Sleipnir just needs to survive. Like, you just do it on turn one.
Yeah, and it's just whenever you charge. I was thinking of the Cap Wolf that...
Oh, yeah. He has the roll of 5-6. Has to
roll dice for it.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Sleipnir just does it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
But he's also the one that can KO his pilot by accident.
Yes.
Or intentionally.
In this case. Oh, man. Any team that just, like, completely breaks the rules of the game like that is very funny. Whether it's good or not, it's a different question, but it's very
funny. I thought
it
was very interesting. Whether it was good or not, I was unsure.
Yeah. Just giving up that many points is definitely a problem. Like... If your opponent can hide one figure from you for the rest of the game, you just sort of lose, which is not fantastic.
Yeah.
The only other thing I'll say is a lot of exciting things we saw in the Deadpool boosters. So when that set's fully out, it'll be very exciting to talk about. I think it's going to be a lot of really meta stuff in there, a lot of really cool stuff. So can't wait for that.
We'll do our set review for that. I think we just got the last of the figures.
I think so. I think we're
there
missing.
Might still be a chase.
I think we're missing and one legacy card right now. If I'm correct,
there is definitely some wild stuff in this set.
I have already been building with Prime Domino.
Yes,
you're just casually mentioning that the 30-point uncommon Mystique gets pick a power. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, then. Yeah, right?
She gets double pick a power if you're an X-Men too. It's pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have great keywords, but hey.
No. But I was very surprised that was my uncommon. I was like, yes, I will immediately play that.
And I look forward to discussing Timebreaker.
I think Timebreaker is going to actually break the game.
I think Timebreaker is legitimately going to get a day one errata. If he does it, I think he needs to be banned.
Yeah.
Like, let's not go into it, but oh god, Timebreaker.
Yeah, he's kind of nuts.
It's a problem.
Yeah.
Just autonomous fantastic. Shouldn't exist in any capacity ever.
No, why does this thing have autonomous?
No. Like, if the one you generated had autonomous for that turn, sure, but This is rough.
Let's, yeah, no, we shouldn't discuss it. It's fine. We'll talk about it in the set review. But yeah, there's some wild stuff in Deadpool. Looking forward to talking about it. Is that, how many more, do we know what the next set after that is?
It's not it's confirmed. Time Masters, isn't
it? It's a DC it's Time Masters, Time Masters, right?
Yeah. Right, I was thinking Masters, of the one after Time Masters.
Which, and that one will probably come out sometime during the summer, I assume. Or maybe early fall. I'm just wondering whether Deadpool is our last pre-world set.
It's probably Masters of Time for Worlds.
Probably.
If I would guess. Which it's going to beg the question, what do we do with the super boosters in Team Worlds? We just get to play them?
I mean, we did with XDPS.
Ooh, okay. That's awesome.
XDPS Team Sealed was a lot of Juggernaut, Nimrod, and Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, makes sense.
I remember that.
Yep. I had a team of a ton of Danger Room constructs that crushed Juggernauts. All right. Yeah, I think that's everything for the day. Glad you guys really enjoyed that event. It seems like a cool event, and I hope that they can find a good venue for next year and keep it going. Because it seemed like it was super successful this year. I mean, that's a lot of money to have raised for charity. So, fantastic. All right. Thanks for joining me, Jackson and Az. I want to thank our patrons. You can join us at patreon.com/JSAClicks. We have a Facebook group for HeroClicks discussion called the JSA Clicks Podcast Discussion Group if you want to join that. Check out some other cool content creators and friends of ours in the description of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you make sure to have fun the next time you play HeroClicks, whether it's competitive or casual.